Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us. Thank you, one and all, for being here. Once again, for our little foray into abnormal, non-ordinary, a different reality, a different way of looking at things, a deeper way. My guest tonight is Trish Casimira, who is a shaman hypnotherapist and does some extraordinary work, and we're going to have a whole lot of fun talking to her. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And for reasons that will become clear as I tell you the whole story, I thought I would muse a little bit about life and death. You know, just lightweight subjects as usual. And you think of life and death situations as being something where someone is suddenly stricken or hurt in some way, or where there's danger involved and that kind of thing. But there are other kinds. There are many, many situations in which things turn in an interesting way. And, you know, I have the reputation for being the ghost guy. For those of you that don't know, I do a talk titled, Is Everything You Know About Ghosts Dead Wrong? And it's a perspective on ghost phenomena that's very different from the mainstream. Instead of focusing on the experience of the living people, which is what most of the stuff that's focused on the paranormal is about, oh my goodness, I saw something or something moved or whatever it is, whatever the drama is. My perspective is, what is the experience of the ghost? Because it may not make any sense to us, and it may be strange and happen in a way that's kind of creepy or that we don't expect. But from the ghost perspective, they're having some experience, and it probably has absolutely nothing to do with us. And so if you want to solve a problem that has to do with ghosts, what you need to do is solve the problem for the ghost and help the ghost cross over. And then the problem that was being caused by the interaction is gone. And for whatever reason, that seems to be an unusual perspective, but it seems pretty straightforward. And I'm thinking about all of this because I have just recently lost two good friends that were amazing healers and amazing teachers, my teachers in many, many ways. One of them was Lynn Armour, who was a shaman from British Columbia with an incredible background. She was my best friend's teacher in shamanic work. And when I was having surgery a couple of years ago, my best friend Frank came up to take care of me. But when he mentioned it to Lynn, she said, oh, I'm supposed to be there. And she came down from Canada and spent 2 weeks taking care of me, feeding me organic food and doing incredible things. And she was on walkabout in a trailer in New Mexico in the desert, got a lung infection and was gone very, very quickly, which I only mentioned because in my experience, Lynn is not gone. I'm talking about her now. She's very present. She has become, in many ways, more present in my life than she was when she was alive and we had to figure out a way to communicate by email or Skype or telephone or whatever it was. She shows up. I have conversations with her. She's not a ghost. She's not earthbound. She's not stuck, but she is still available in spirit. And part of the reason I'm telling this kind of story tonight is the other one is a woman that I knew for, God, over 30 years, I think. I met her, I think, the first year that I moved up to Massachusetts. Deborah Waldron was an incredible dancer and movement therapist, but she also developed a healing methodology that combined energy work with deep tissue work. And if you do body work, you know what those two are, and they seem like polar opposites. And she in a very masterful way, combined the two, came up with a way to teach that, got that licensed as a massage therapy technique in the state of Massachusetts, and started a school. And very long story, she then became wheelchair bound and was wheelchair bound for 20 years. And she recently died. And the reason that that story has any relevance, because it's out of left field to telling that, is that my guest tonight, Trish Casimira, was the person who was with Deborah for those last days and was taking care of her through all of that. And I got to hear and see just a little bit of that. But Trish, it does amazing work in that area of end of life and what is life and what is death. And we will be talking about some of those things. So in that case, also, Deb was not somebody that I saw a whole lot. But since she's crossed over, anytime I think of her, it's like she's right next to me, giving me a hard time and telling me stories. So for those of you that don't have that experience, like many, many other things we talk about on the show, I'm suggesting to you that that experience is very real, very, very possible for anybody, and a very rich part of life. Something that in indigenous cultures all over the world, everyone go, oh yeah, I talk to grandma all the time, or I talk to whoever the person happens to be, because that presence and that richness is very, very available. So that's my little tribute to my friend tonight, and hopefully a thought-provoking moment about what is life and what is death and what is a life or death moment. And that's tonight's metaphysical musing, and now we get to have some fun with my guest, Trish Casimira. You with us, Trish?
I'm here. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
I know you've had a lot going on for over a week now, and I'm very glad that you were able to come on the show. Deb's death last Thursday was the reason that you weren't on the show last Thursday, and we ran a rerun of somebody else's conversation. So I'm very, very glad that you could be with us tonight.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
And so the way we usually start these conversations, our little tradition on the show, is to ask each of our guests, how'd you get here? What was, you know, and it's always the shorter version because we're talking about decades of process here. Yeah. But how did you wind up where you are doing the work that you do?
Well, you know, to shorten the story, I'll just give you the backstory of, in looking in retrospect, I can see where this journey began when I was 5 years old at a near-death experience. And the traditional light came in, and I tried to go through it and was told I couldn't come in. And three beings or angels appeared to me and lovingly told me that they would stay with me the rest of my life. And I've felt those spiritual beings throughout my life, even when I was in complete denial about any spiritual happening of any kind in my life, which I've dipped in and out of, as we all have, until we get to the place where we can no longer deny it, which is where I came to. I just had this intense shamanic experience at one point in time, and it was very clear to me that so many things that had happened in my life led up to that moment where I could no longer, I could no longer say that there was nothing happening. I also, in a vision through the shamanic experience, met my grandmother, who was a Cherokee woman. And she embraced me, and I had what I call a quickening, where lots of information came into my brain and downloaded. And I've kind of been pulling those files out ever since that moment.
Yeah.
And I also realized at that moment that I could no longer not walk on the red road because it was such a part of me that I had to step onto it. And the more I stepped onto the native path, the more my sense of hearing and my clairaudience got tuned up and ramped up. So that's how I kind of came to that. And in the meantime, shortly after that, I was in a pretty serious car accident and I was injured. But I was also doing a dissertation in Boston, living on Cape Cod, and I couldn't take painkillers. So I took a hypnosis class to kind of manage my pain and found out that I kind of had a natural talent for it. And so when that school semester was over, I took a year off to heal my body and opened a hypnosis practice so that I could do my shamanic healing work under an umbrella. Mm-hmm. And I found that I really loved being able to get people to a place where they could find their own wisdom deep within them and figure out what they needed to do to feel better or move out of the stuck place they were in. So that's kind of how I got started in the profession of hypnosis. And the shamanic work that I did fit very nicely under that because, you know, as is the law of attraction, people would come to me who really wanted deep soul healing. And they only saw the hypnosis piece as a window. And indeed, it was the shamanic healing piece that they were after.
Right.
So I was able to combine the two of those very nicely. And it's interesting that you talked about Deb and how she combined these two techniques. I also did that in my practice where, you know, many people have heard of soul retrieval in the shamanic world. Mm-hmm. And in the traditional, even though we're the neo-traditional sense of soul retrieval, the person who is the shaman goes off into the other worlds and finds the fragmented part of one's soul and brings it back and reestablishes it for the person and then tells them everything that they experienced. And pretty soon after I started doing that kind of work, my grandmother's spirit would say to me, you know, you are in this lifetime to help to empower yourself, but also to help empower other people to do their own work. And so the hypnosis piece came blended in there, and I began to take my clients through a soul retrieval under hypnosis, having them do the same shamanic journey that I would do as the shaman and find their own fragmented soul and be able to have a conversation with it and then integrate it back into their own bodies. Mm-hmm. And it was so much more powerful that it's been a very, very long time since I've done a soul retrieval for someone. I take them right through that process. So right. I combine those two techniques. So it's kind of no surprise that Deb and I ended up meeting and working together.
Well, when I started getting more and more people that needed some kind of possession work, that needed, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call them exorcisms, but needed to have entities removed from them. Being a geeky guy, I went looking for the literature, and I was surprised to find that a lot of the literature was written by people with MD or PhD after their names on the book titles, and I decided I would read those because it sounded more credible. And it turned out they were all using clinical hypnosis. And what they uncovered was that if they were presented with someone with what appeared to be a multiple personality, a dissociative disorder, they call it now, and they treated the personalities as part of that person, they typically would go nowhere. Mm-hmm. But if they treated those personalities as separate personalities that weren't supposed to be there, that came from somewhere else, they could eventually get them to leave. They didn't like that idea, but it worked. And the same thing happened with past life stuff. If they treated them as fantasies, they would get no resolution. But if they treated them as real events that happened somewhere in some way in some time that they couldn't quite figure out, but it wasn't now in this lifetime, they knew it was something else. But if they treated it as being real, the person could let it go. So the idea, this people doing hypnotherapy, figuring out that there's more to it and guiding people through it, it's this very powerful combination. And several people have come up with exactly the same stuff, which happens all the time. Mm-hmm. But you can do it from the deep perspective of someone that already knew the shamanic tradition and knew how to do it in the old ways. So you started out believing it. all these other folks were kind of dragged, kicking and screaming by the results.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, I have a very healthy skeptical side to me. And so many of the things that I've learned over the years, I've gone in skeptical. And and I think that's been a really healthy thing, because I don't just accept what people say because they're teaching it. I'm not someone who likes to be boxed into a system, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Because I find that my connection to spirit is such that if there's a way for it to be tweaked, they'll tell me that. And that means that I sometimes have to go against the grain. Right. You know, for instance, when I would do shamanic healing work, people would tell me, wow, that was really intense Reiki. And I had never heard of Reiki before.
Right.
So I went to study it just to say that I did and to see what the similarities were, but still always tapping in and listening to my guides, because I think that they are the highest authority. And I base my work on that. Although, you know, I've certainly studied with lots of amazing people and follow their systems until it gets to the point where I know that there's intuitively something else to be done.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you make it your own, which is a good chance for us to talk about the special work that you do that's called Life Between Lives, is it?
Yes, Life Between Life Regression. So when I became a hypnotist, I very quickly moved into the esoteric field of past life regression. And as all hypnotists are, even today, still trained, you take people to a past life and then another past life and then another past life, and you begin to see a thread of what their soul lesson is all about, let's say. But nobody ever asked the question, well, where do you go in between all
right.
those lives?
Right.
And Michael Newton was a past life regression therapist, and one of his clients began to take him on a journey. She said she needed to go home and see her. She missed her group. She missed her family. Mm-hmm. And so he sat back and let her take him somewhere. And she ended up going into the spirit world and telling him what it was all about and what it was like. So being the researcher and the clinician that he was, his next patient, he said, that was back in the days when we called them patients.
Right.
he said he took his next patient into a past life regression and then through her death and said, well, where do you go now? And he followed her, and lo and behold, she went to the same place.
Mm.
So he spent 15 years asking the same question and found that people went to the exact same place with variations based on how old their soul was, what their work was all about, and who their soulmates were. So when I was doing my hypnosis work in past life regression, I had a woman one time say to me that she needed to find to talk to me about her purpose and her contracts. So now I'd never heard that word before, contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to listen to her, and it began to make sense to me that she had some knowledge about why she was here on the earth plane and that she had contracts that she needed to fulfill. So I began to pay attention, and pretty soon somebody dropped Michael Newton's book in my hand.
Of course.
And of course. And as I began to read, I was like, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be going. So the minute he decided to train other hypnotists to do the work, I was on board and went to study with him. an amazing researcher who wasn't, you know, deeply into the esoterics. This kind of fell into his lap the same way Brian Weiss, who is the past life regression guru. Thank you, Oprah. in the same way it fell into his lap, where a client began to speak about something and he followed her. Well, the same phenomenon happened to Michael Newton. And when I went to study this work, it was very extraordinary, because the work is about, where do you go after a past life? After you die, where do you go?
Right.
And there's a very specific place that we all go into the spirit world, and we do very specific things with our group of guides who have been with us since the inception of our soul. And we have a group of souls that we incarnate with every lifetime, and we do work with them. And when we're in the spirit world, for however long that is, because you and I know the time is relevant and there's no time in the spirit world.
Right.
But we learn to do things in the spirit world, like move matter or create rocks or work with crystals or things that are phenomenons that we need when we come down here on the earth plane. So after we spend that time there, we then sit with our council of elders and we review what we learned in our last life. And then we determine how we're going to do it in the next life. And they help us choose a life, they choose a body, choose a family, and choose our purpose in life and what we're going to accomplish when we come down here and incarnate. And Michael Newton found a way to regress people into a very, very deep trance so that they could remember this meeting that they had in the spirit world before they incarnated this time. So that if we can remember what it is we signed up for, we can get it done.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
and that's what that regression's all about.
That's great. I have some more questions. Just reassure me that when you go to that place on the other side, it's not like what they show in the movie Beetlejuice. I figure there is some bureaucratic element to it, and it might even sort of be steampunk in some way, but I sure hope it's not like Beetlejuice.
Well, that sold a lot of movies.
like so many other crazy ghost movies,
right,
absolutely.
Right, yeah. And the afterlife is nothing like anything you've seen, other than What Dreams May Come. That's the movie that came closest.
Right, right.
Everyone goes to a beautiful place when they first arrive in the afterlife, where they let go of the density of being in flesh and being on the earth plane. And but then they go to different places, different stations in the afterlife where they learn. And you know what? The hardest thing for people to wrap their head around, particularly if they've been raised in a dogmatic religion, there's no judgment in the spirit world.
Right.
And no one has ever gone to a place with flames. No
right.
one has ever gone down. They go up into the spirit world, where it's a loving and beautiful place. And if you did something terrible in this life, your spirit guides will say to you, wow, that must have been really hard for your soul. What did you learn?
Right, right.
So,
well,
yeah.
when we come back, I want to kick around that idea of whether there are people that are experiencing something like hell, because I've seen some things, and I want to see how it fits with what you've learned. But I also want to make sure that people know your website and how to get in touch with you.
Ah, great. My website is souljourneying.com, and you can find me in various ways from that link, soul, S-O-U-L, journeying.
Right. And you're on Facebook. They can find you as Trish Casimira, Casimira. And we will talk more about how they can get in touch with you in a minute. If people want to make comments or ask questions while we're on the air, if you're listening to us while we're doing the show, because a lot of people listen at other times, If you have a Twitter account, just send a message to @FarkasFiles. And very important, use the hashtag FarkasFiles. So #FarkasFiles. And I'm sitting here with a window open on my computer that shows that hashtag and everything that comes to it. So if you have something, we can respond during the show, which is a lot of fun. When we get back, I definitely want to get back to that, you know, where do we go and are there bad places to go and what does that mean? Because we had three authors that had written books about how hell didn't exist in the Christian scripture at all. And then we had a round robin with a theologian and several of the authors talking about the theology of hell and where the idea of hell came from. So that topic of whether hell exists and what in the world is that story about has been on this show several times.
Well, it's a hot topic.
Oh, ba-dum-tsh.
I couldn't help it.
That was great. But seriously, folks, we'll be back in a couple of minutes with Tris Casimiro, who I did not know was such a good stand-up comic, here on the Farkas Files. Don't go nowhere.
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling.
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty, it's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
This bobcat's heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude! What happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six,
ow,
seven. Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Trish Casimira, shaman and hypnotist, and does amazing stuff. So we were talking about the life between lives. Well, what's it called? What's the correct?
Life between lives regression.
Life between lives regression. And you were talking about what happens and the idea that nobody is punished. It's all about what you've learned. And that's always been my impression of what goes on. When I think of people crossing over, my way of talking about it is I just have to get them into intake. I just have to get them into whatever it is on the other side that scoops them up and takes care of them. And, you know, whether you see it as being bureaucratic or your group or whatever it is, it's all handled. You just have to get them to cross over. So, but one of the hot, as you said, hot topics on this show for a while was the idea of the concept of hell and whether hell exists in scripture, but also does it exist at all? What's that about? And one of the things that I've seen in doing my work is that if somebody believes that they have done something they can't be forgiven for, and if they believe that because of that they will be punished in a particular way, when they die, they won't cross over. They'll go to the place where everyone else with that belief is attracted together, experiencing the punishment they expect only because they believe it's going to happen. So they're not being punished by anyone or anything other than their belief system. So it's one of the many ways I've identified that people don't cross over, that they never get to the other side to have the conversations that you were talking about. So in your work and doing the regression stuff, have you seen anything like that where people can't make it into the process? They don't cross over. They get stuck between in the in-between thing that is something we call ghosts, but that doesn't make any sense no matter what you call it. But there
I have. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just there are certainly many people that don't make it to intake, that don't make it to that place that you're describing.
Right. I've had lots of people experience being stuck on the earth plane before they went anywhere.
Yep.
But first I want to back up and talk about the one, maybe two clients of all the years I've been doing this that couldn't get there because of their religious belief system in thinking that they had done something wrong. Yep. And they thought they were fearful that if they did get over there, that they would experience some sort of hellish or some sort of judgment, and they wouldn't allow themselves to go. So my training in hypnosis has really helped me to understand how the human mind works. If we hold a belief system, everything that we do is geared toward and triggered by that belief system. And if we really believe that we're going to be punished, it will guide our behaviors. And that's, you know, one of the greatest tools that any kind of power over institution uses against people to get them to snap into line. And unfortunately, if we learn things as, at an early age, if it's dogmatically presented to us at an early age, it sticks even when we grow out of it.
Right.
So I'm thinking of a woman who came to me who was a practicing Buddhist, but she had been in a very strict Catholic upbringing. And when she began to do the regression, those Catholic upbringing teachings came in and stopped her progress. The mind is a wonderful thing, and it's a thing that is designed to protect us, but all the belief systems that we hold will come up.
Mm-hmm.
And they come up in order for us to be able to look at them and let them go, or say, yes, I believe this, or no, I don't. That's kind of what makes hypnosis unique as a therapeutic tool. It helps you get to kind of your core beliefs.
Right.
So if someone is really coming to me and they have those dogmatic belief systems, we kind of have to work around them and address them and ask the inner core, you know, what is it that they really believe and what is it that they really want? And once someone is able to let that go just for a minute, then they're able to step over that threshold.
Right.
And so, you know, that's definitely a part of my work, but not as much. People tend to come to me when they're really wanting and believing that there is an afterlife that is loving and wonderful and they want to get to. But let's talk a minute about disembodied souls that wander around on the earth, because that's certainly what your work is all about.
And it's a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've come across that a lot. I'm thinking of one in particular. When I first began this work and I was fresh at it, a woman, so we begin our life between life work with going to the last life that we lived, our past life that was the most recent one. Mm. And then I take people through their death experience to remember their death, and then breaks any karmic ties that they might have, and then use that as a springboard to where did you go up into the spirit world right before this lifetime. So that's kind of the way the technique goes. So this particular woman was in a past life a man and a lumberjack, and getting kind of old in his 50s. And a younger man on the crew asked him to go out into the woods with him to look at something. And while he was out there, the younger man ambushed him and hit him with an axe in the stomach and then left him there in the woods to die. So as is the protocol, I took the woman who was the man,
right,
because in past lives, we experience both genders, and all stages of life. And, so I kept asking the man, do you see the light? Can we go to the light? And he kept walking around in the woods, and he couldn't find this light. Nowhere. I said, well, how about a doorway? How about an archway? You know, and all these variations of what the light should be. And he wasn't finding anything. He just kept wandering around in the woods. And I finally asked him, well, how long do you stay in the woods? And he thought for a minute, and he said, 55 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really long time, because it wasn't his time. The doorway for him to leave wasn't available.
Huh.
And so he had to wander around on the earth plane. And because someone else took his life, it wasn't part of his plan. Someone else's choice interfered with his exit plan. So his soul had to wander around until he could find that doorway. So that was very fascinating information for me to learn.
Yeah.
And I started asking people about doorways. And in fact, almost all of us have had an experience of something really close happening, a close call where we said, man, I shouldn't be here.
Right.
I should have died there. But it wasn't our doorway. It wasn't our time. And so people do talk about that in their experience of the afterlife, at seeing, looking back at their life and seeing times when they had a near-death experience, for instance, and they came back. Why? So not only do people get to remember signing up for their life mission and meeting their soul group, but they also get to look back at their life and see earmarked times and things that happened, and how was that a part of their purpose in life, and realize that those times when they could have died, they didn't die because it wasn't their doorway.
One of the things that I've heard over and over again about sudden deaths or accidental deaths or deaths in combat of some sort is that that moment is so engaging and so completely all-encompassing that the person just doesn't notice. They don't notice that their body died.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very, the scenario that you're describing is not something that I've seen or heard before. So I'm really fascinated with it. But one of the two things I've heard over and over again are that 80 to 90% of ghosts don't know they're dead.
Yeah. I've come across that as well in my book.
Right. Right. Which is, you know, you can read it in the literature all over the place, all over the world. So which then brings up the question of, well, how can that happen? And the obvious one is a sudden death. So such a fast death that the moment goes by, leaving you confused. And I actually I had an interaction with a ghost who was harassing one of my patients in a psych hospital late at night. And I finally just said, "Do you know you're dead?" And his answer was, "Oh, that explains a whole lot." Just one of those precious, you know, and I couldn't laugh because I'm trying to get him out. I'm trying to be serious. But so that piece of it is an ongoing question for me, and I'm always looking for the bits and pieces of how that happens for people. And then there are the people who, like the folks that think they're going to be punished, either consciously stay earthbound and, you know, hang out with their buddies in the cemetery who all believe they can't go anywhere because they'll get punished, or because of their beliefs go to whatever their version of hell is, even though there isn't anybody sending them there. It's just their belief that gets them there. There are these various scenarios. But the idea that they just miss the timing, I hadn't heard before, and that's fascinating.
And, you know, I have to think that if somebody does have the experience of hell, that it would be that they didn't find the doorway and they were disembodied here on the earth plane. I can't imagine a bigger hell than that.
Well, except there's no time.
Yeah.
So, you know, 55 years, it's a changing moment is the only thing that I can figure out. The moment changes in some various ways, but it's not like linear time. And as Einstein described the experience of relativity, you know, unless it to them, it was a hellish experience and took a very long time because they didn't like it, it could also go by in a heartbeat.
Right, in our time, yeah.
So that piece of it, but I've also, to see if this fits with other pieces of what you know, I've heard from several people that when you make up your life plan, you give yourself escape routes. So it's not that there's necessarily one doorway, but that you keep an option open for various particular circumstances. Well, if this happens, I'll make a choice whether or not I'm going to stay for the next act. And
there's always a choice. Always a choice. And people do leave early in the case of suicide. People have left early, but once they get to their guides and they explain why they left early, because they couldn't fulfill their sole purpose, their mission was interrupted or something of that nature, their guides help them work it out. It's confusing for the soul if you leave early, but the guides help work it out. You know, Michael Newton's first book, Journey of Souls, talks about all of this and what he discovered after 15 years of where the soul goes. It's a pretty remarkable book.
Okay, I'm writing it down. Another book for my extensive list. But I also have to read it so we can have the conversation that can only happen after I've read the book.
And since we're doing a plug here, the fourth book that Michael authored is called Memories of the Afterlife, and I have a chapter in that book.
Oh,
it's a book of stories from his therapists, and it differs in his other books in that his other books talk about the process of what the spirit world looks like. The memories of the afterlife is our case studies, but then they talk about how this impacted people's lives after the fact, what the regression actually did for them. And I was honored to have edited half of that book with Michael and have a chapter in it. And there are some very, very interesting and poignant stories in that book about what people discovered when they went into the afterlife based on some things that had happened in their life of being not so good people, having lost children, having committed suicide, having had a difficult life. You know, every experience that we have on the earth plane, we have for a reason and for a purpose. And when we discover what that purpose is, then we can move through it. As that one said, oh, now this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie Cloud Atlas?
I have not. That is on my list to see.
Well, I have the DVD.
Ah.
So perhaps we can watch it together. For those that haven't figured it out, Trish lives locally. So we've actually met. And yes, that's a fascinating movie because it really addresses this whole idea of soul groups and traveling through time, through different lives, changing your role, changing your gender identity, and how over the course of many, many lifetimes, there's a story that's unfolding that's unfolds over all the lifetimes. It's not just the story of your individual life, but that there are things going on over hundreds of years. It's a fascinating movie. So, yeah, would love to watch that with you. And it's also one of those movies like Inception that you have to watch several times before you really figure out what all of it is. So it really moves quickly. But it's exquisite. And for people that have never heard of it, Tom Hanks, Halle Berry, and a bunch of other people that you would know, a very small ensemble cast of, I think it's 6 or 8 actors, play all of these characters through all the different lifetimes, changing what they do, what they look like, what gender they are, whether they're an important character or an insignificant character in that particular situation, and how they cross paths and affect each other. Just incredible movie.
I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, it's really great.
And that isn't, you know, in fact, exactly what happens with soul groups. And I'm wondering if that film crew read any of Michael's stuff. They certainly must have, because Michael is the pioneer of understanding soul groups and contracts, even though a lot of other people are talking about it. He kind of brought that information forward.
We
all travel in groups, and we just switch around and we help each other do stuff. So, and the thing that's important, I don't know if this movie points it out or not, but the thing that most people find interesting when I talk about this is that sometimes the person who has done you wrong is your most beloved soulmate. Because if you and I are soulmates in the spirit world, Before we incarnate, if you say to me, man, I had somebody really betray me in the last lifetime and I lost everything and it was awful. And I say, wow, really? What did you learn? And you said, well, I learned how much integrity and strength that I had. And I say, wow, I think I might like to learn that. And so you might say, well, okay, I'll help you. I'll come down. And I'll meet you, and I'll steal all your money, and I'll break your heart. And I love you that much that I'll do that for you. And that's the contracts that we make with soulmates. You know, not all of them are that heavy. But indeed, sometimes the people that have really hurt us are our beloveds in the spirit world.
Yes. Maybe not so much in that lifetime.
Yeah, not in that lifetime, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, my image is you get to the other side, and when you get to hang out with your group again, you go to whatever the equivalent of the local bar is, And everybody tells their stories, and the one with the best story gets the most free etheric beer. And, you know, everybody goes, yeah, I see what you did there. You know, that was amazing. Oh, no kidding. You did that? I wish I was there for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly what happens. And I can tell you, I've had more than one person tell me that the drinks they have are like liquid light, that they literally have martini glasses with liquid light beverage in them. So there is party time happening in the spirit world, folks.
I had a feeling.
And you know, Deb is right there at the head of the party.
Absolutely.
I have to, since you brought her in as how we're really connected, because we actually met at Deb's house. One of the most wonderful things that I got to do for her was, while she was passing, tell her to remember what the spirit world was like.
Mm.
Tell her to remember how beautiful it was, and how she would meet all of those people who were her beloveds, and how everything would be just absolutely wonderful. And it so soothed her when she was moving into that. And she did indeed begin to see people. You know, some people call it hallucinations, but we all know, those of us who do this work, that people begin to cross over while they're still in body,
right,
and they begin to see their loved ones. And she began to see those pathways of light and parties and dancing and laughing. And she was so comforted that it was just wonderful.
Yeah. Deb's a great gal.
Mm-hmm.
Great gal. So, what other little bits and pieces? We're winding down to the end of the hour, which always amazes me. There's so much more to talk about.
Hmm.
What else do you want to leave people with?
Well, I really would like, you know, one of the things that people ask after they read one of Michael's books is, well, I don't know if I can be hypnotized. I don't know if it can work for me. But, you know, everybody's been hypnotized. Anybody who watches television gets hypnotized. So it's not something to be concerned about. It's our brains have the natural ability to go into a hypnotic state. And pretty much anybody can do it. It is a very intense process, and I would urge people to go to Michael Newton's website. It's called the Newton Institute. And every therapist who has been trained by the Newton Institute is listed there, so you can find a qualified therapist to help you do this. A lot of people are, you know, are doing this kind of work. But the intensity with which Michael Newton brought forth this technique has such incredible integrity that I would really encourage people to find a qualified person who's gone through the Institute. So you can Google Michael Newton or the NewtonInstitute.com and find that information.
And can people work with you at a distance? Is that something that can be done?
You know, there are a lot of things that I do at a distance, but this requires such monitoring that I don't do it at a distance. I want to really be with you. You know, going through past life and letting go of karmic stuff can be very cathartic and very emotional. And I don't want to take a chance of the phone line getting disconnected.
Right.
So I really require people to come and see me. And I've had people come from all over the world. I think Zimbabwe is the farthest someone's traveled to see me. But now that we're training so many people, the chances are that you can go onto Michael's website and find a therapist close.
Terrific.
To you.
Well, Trish, thank you so much for being on the show.
It's been an absolute delight. Thank you for asking.
Oh, we really must do this again sometimes.
All right.
Okay, and we will get together for movie nights and watch Cloud Atlas. Should be a wonderful conversation after that one.
Yes, definitely.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. My guest tonight was Trish Casimira. Her website is souljourneying.com. And check her out. She does amazing, amazing work. Thanks again for being with us.
Absolutely. And don't forget, Memories of the Afterlife can be purchased anywhere. And it's a book that you don't have to read cover to cover. You can just jump through the stories and read it.
Read the stories, yeah.
Yeah.
Terrific. Great. Okay.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, Trish. And if any of this has made you curious about my work, please go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding on the contact tab is every conceivable way to get in touch with me. But you can also schedule an appointment for a free 20-minute conversation about what's going on with you and how my work might be helpful. If you want to listen to other shows, or you want to tell somebody about this show and where they can listen to it, go to www.thefarkasfiles, cleverly enough, .com. No, just the Farkas file. And you'll find the archive of all our shows. We've probably got over 60 shows in the archive at this point. You can also find us on iTunes podcasts and a bunch of other places. So there are some interesting things in Power Radio is doing these days. So I hope you will be with us again next week when we will have lots more fun. And until then, this is David Franklin Farkas. For the Farkas Files, the truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a wonderful week.